Good afternoon. It's Matt Rothschild. I'm subbing in for Maggie Dawn here on the Maggie Dawn Show. Maggie will be back tomorrow. And I have as a guest right now one of my favorite people in Wisconsin. It's former Senate Majority Leader for the Republicans, Dale Schultz from Richland Center. Dale, are you there?
I am. I'm here. Guilty on all counts.
There you go. Guilty without a trial. Dale, for those of you who don't know, was one of the leaders in the movement in Wisconsin to ban gerrymandering. He and his partner, the former Senate Majority Leader for the Democrats, Tim Cullen, would go around the state and do a little dog and pony show, if you don't mind me saying, Dale, where they would talk about how the maps were rigged and that neither party should be able to rig the maps, and that they would make the case for nonpartisan redistricting and an end to gerrymandering. Well, lo and behold, here we are, Dale, and gerrymandering is over, at least for the moment, and we have fair maps, or certainly much fairer maps. What was your reaction to this fallout?
Well, as I said on civic media immediately after the arguments were made to the Wisconsin Supreme Court, that I basically think that the court oral arguments were well put on both sides. I think all the justices acquitted themselves very well, and it's not a comment to whether I agree with them or not, but just that I think the purpose of those oral arguments is to frame the issues in front of the court for the public. I have been to oral arguments before, something that not a lot of people, frankly, not a lot of legislators do often enough, and I was pretty satisfied. I believe in the most recent situation where there was an action to redo the congressional maps that Justice Protasiewicz demonstrated or proved herself to be a serious jurist by recusing herself. Frankly, I think the map should be redone, but given her situation and where we're at, I think it was the prudent thing to do. You know, there's an old saying that I learned many years ago, and I can't even remember where, but I am fond of telling people because so many people scratch their head when they hear about Supreme Court decisions. And it's this, that the Supreme Court isn't final because it's right. It's right because it's final. It's difficult to always draw from thin air a paradigm of justice. There are a lot of factors that weigh in, and these are people we ask to use their best judgment, and sometimes they'll view things more narrowly or more broadly than maybe we would like, and I think some of that, frankly, is connected to our preferences in advance, but I think the system has worked pretty well in this country, and so the bottom line is, we are now on the road to taking away the power away from politicians to pick their constituents, and rather we now have constituents prepared to pick their politicians. And I think that takes us a long way to where we need to be.
Yeah, and Dale Schultz, these new maps that Governor Evers signed and that the Republicans in the legislature finally voted for will make for a lot more competitive districts. And what difference do you think that will make?
Well, I think that there will be more competitive districts, but that wasn't just the reasoning behind what we did. I think what we wanted to do was really empower people. And if you remember, our Supreme Court case was really about re-empowering people and to their, you know, to their natural rights. And I think that was more the crux of the issue than competitiveness, because we wanted the law to be followed with respect to redistricting, not to create some new paradigm of fairness. We knew that if the law was followed, things would get fairer, but I don't think we're going to see a mirror of fairness. We're going to see something a little fuzzier, something that I think should give people heart, that the role they play in the electoral process is real and it's important, and it should send a signal to politicians they can't take the wishes of their constituents for granted anymore.
Yeah, and I think you're getting to the heart of the matter there, where, you know, there are so many things that the people of Wisconsin by huge majorities want, and they're just, it's just not happening. It hasn't happened in these rigged districts that the Republicans rammed through in 2011 and 2021, medical marijuana, Medicaid expansion, public education spending, things like that. And I think there should be a better chance at getting those majoritarian policies passed. And that's how things should be in a democracy. I think when you have vast majorities that want something, they should be able to get it from their legislature, don't you think?
Well, I think that's true, but perhaps more importantly, because, you know, we have representatives because we don't have the time to do the job ourselves. We pick somebody to represent us. And that means they have to have some latitude. And I think what we're really hoping for is to send a message that if you make a decision that is contrary, you know, to the public's will, that there's a chance for accountability. And that's what elections are about. They're about accountability. And if they're fairly run, everyone should be accountability. Now, as Tim and I said many times as we went around the state, certainly over 100 times, talking to communities, we run into you quite frequently and other good government people, Republicans and Democrats don't have clean hands. Both sides have done this. And we wanted to make certain that as we spoke to people, we were serious about leading an effort that benefited everyone, not just Republicans, not just Democrats, but the people writ large.
And this was so much a part of the mass movement that happened in Wisconsin. You're going around the state with Tim Cullen, and also was a model of bipartisanship. One Republican Senate Majority Leader, one Democratic Senate Majority Leader, after leaving office, going to towns and cities all over the state saying, look, we need a better way to do this, and that the politicians shouldn't be able to control who their voters are, and no district should be any politician's district. I know some of the Republicans were angry that several of their elected officials are now competing against each other, and it's no longer their district. What do you make of that argument?
Well, I don't subscribe to that at all. As I said, these districts belong to the people. They do not belong to those of us who have had the honor of playing a role in the districts that were drawn every 10 years. And I think we've reestablished that thought. And I also want to say parenthetically that all that is wrong with Wisconsin's government or our nation's government is not solved by redistricting reform. We have too big a role of influence of money in the process, and we have very real problems with voter participation and suppression. And I hope that what this resolution will do will inspire people in a grassroots way to get involved in their government on the right and in the left, so that we can have a rebirth of those ideas that the founding fathers put forth and the hopes that they held for our country. And that's, you know, my view of the future. And I certainly plan on continuing a degree of civic involvement. I just made a decision a few years back that it wasn't going to be full time because there were a whole lot of other things going on in my life and about to go on in my life.
Oh, and I'd love to talk, and we'll talk more about that coming up, but I do want to stress that it is, this has been a great bipartisan movement across the state of Wisconsin. There were resolutions or referendums in 57 counties where the people, either directly through a referendum or through the resolution of their county board, said that they are against gerrymandering. And you had a lot to do with that. I think you're also absolutely right, Dale Schultz, about this question of money in politics. And it's just a huge problem that dates back more than a century, but was exacerbated, of course, by the Citizens United decision in 2010, when the U.S. Supreme Court said corporations and other groups can spend unlimited amounts of money to tell you who to vote for and who not to vote for. And then there was a terrible rewrite of our campaign finance law in 2015 here by the Republican-dominated legislature that gave corporations and super-rich individuals much more sway over our elections. So we've got to definitely tackle that. And yes, the other issue you brought up that's so important, voter participation, get rid of the laws that are suppressing the vote. And the more people vote, the better.
Let's get back to discussing ideas and encouraging people to vote for candidates that advance ideas and values that we all hold dear.
Yeah, and it's hard to get there when you have just one negative ad after another. And I know a lot of campaigns just raise ridiculous amounts of money so they can throw as much mud as possible at the screen. And that it discourages people from voting and also just depresses people no end.
Well, I hope it won't take 10 years to resolve some of those issues. I'm going to continue to do my part. And if everybody steps forward, I think it is certainly doable. And I know you'll be there as well, my friend.
Well, I'm trying to do what I can, though. You know, you dragged me out of retirement or Civic Media did today because, you know, I retired at the end of June, was pretty happy just doing what I was doing. But, you know, there was a part of me that was nagging me with the thought that I'm not doing enough, especially right now, especially with the threat of Donald Trump, frankly. And so I'm happy to be more public again. Just started to stick my head above ground and do a little bit of talking and a little bit of politicking. I believe in conversation. You know, I'm kind of a 19th century John Stuart Mill guy who, with the hopeless idea that if we just talk things through, the truth will out. I'm not sure, given Donald Trump's success, that that is actually a philosophy that has been proven true over a long time, but I believe in it. I think it's an ideal to shoot for, and that's why I was always so impressed with the work that you and Tim Cullen were doing. We're going to come back after the break, Dale, and I do want to talk about what you've been doing in retirement, and maybe I'll give a few hints about what I've been doing, too. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show on Civic Media. I'm Matt Rothschild. I'm speaking with Dale Schultz. Back, Matt Rothschild here, subbing in for Maggie Dawn on the Maggie Dawn Show, and I'm joined for this segment with Dale Schultz, the former majority leader in the state Senate, Republican from Richland Center, kind of a moderate Republican, which some folks think may be a vanishing species near extinct, but I don't think you're of that mind. Dale, you meet people in the middle all the time, don't you?
Well, I try to. I'm not fond of the word being a moderate. I like to think of myself as a raging centrist, somebody who fervently believes that if people are given an opportunity to listen to one another and civilly converse with one another, more often than not, they're going to come to the right conclusion and offer us a path forward. And I'm bothered by people who want to change our system of government, make it more parliamentary, have a national agenda, and make it more about the party rather than about the people. But, you know, I wanted to get over to this thought about retiring. I think a lot of people think that it's about how much money you have and do you have enough money to survive. And certainly that's an important issue for an awful lot of people, and it continues to be as there are threats against people's, you know, Social Security and retirement savings and like, and that we all need to pay attention to. But to me, it's much more about the balance you seek in life and the recognition that life is changing and your role, your identity disappears, and you need to think it through when you decide to retire, and that's a deeply personal thing, and it certainly was for me. It took me basically a year, and I'm sure you're finding that out now, aren't you?
Yeah, you know, my role, well, my primary role in life is to be a husband and a father, I've been happily married to Jean for 38 years, who grew up in Janesville and showed me that kindness is the prime virtue in life. And I'm indebted to her for that and for so many other things. And we have three children, three adult children, but still parental duties are required there. So I identify that way. And I also have a lot of hobbies. I mean, my hobbies get in the way of my hobbies, Dale. I mean, I like to play chess in the morning on chess.com. I'm a bird watcher. I think anyone who knows me knows I'm a crazy bird watcher. And by the way, all bird watchers are crazy to one degree or another. And some are really crazy and will drive hundreds and hundreds of miles or jump on a plane to go see a rare bird. I'm not that crazy anymore, anyway. I did drive up north of St. Paul one year when the great gray owls were coming down from Canada. I'd never seen one, and it's such a cool bird looming out of the pages of the Peterson Field Guide that I grew up with. I've been birding since I was 5 years old. And so I said, oh, my God, this is my one chance to see great gray owls. So I drive up there. I see 12 great gray owls in an hour on the county road that I had researched. And then I drove back. And then one time I went to Door County to see a hawk owl, which is kind of a combination hawk and owl, as you'd think. And I drove 4 hours, didn't see it, came back home, and someone reported seeing it about 10 minutes after I left. But that's the life of a bird watcher. But now I'm pretty content just to look at the cardinals, admire the cardinals and the chickadees and the nuthatches. And then in May, when the orioles and grosbeaks come, I just love that, and the warblers too. So that's a huge passion. And, you know, I got other passions too. I like to play tennis. You know, I like to play cards, you know. So, you know, I could do that and be pretty content, but I do want to keep my voice around on some political things too. What do you do, Dale, to keep you busy?
Well, I've always had, like you, a wide range of interests, and I think most people know that my wife and I carry on the family farming tradition up in Western Sauk County, and I think we're cruising in on 150 years of our family being on the ridge. I've recently been involved in a community organizing effort on a nonpartisan basis in Richland Center. As you know, we had a real difficult time with the closure of our campus here. A lot of people believed that the legislature and the governor and the university were not listening to us. So we're on a mission to, on a bipartisan basis, hold people accountable. That could be another program and another day.
Well, I know Todd Albaugh's done a great job covering that for Civic Media.
Well, he does, and I think people here and in the places where the other campuses are at risk feel very grateful as well. I too love bird watching, especially those that fly and taste good. As you know, I'm quite a bird hunter, and I have a new puppy, so we've been spending a lot of bonding time and training time. My wife is really the expert at that, although she doesn't hunt much anymore.
So, Dale, is that duck hunting or pheasant, or what are you after?
It's all of it. I goose hunt, I duck hunt, I do upland game bird hunting, and it's just a turkeys. I love people who love animals. I've always loved animals. It's why I love farming. It's why I love going to horse pulling contests or watching animals do what they're trained to do, whether it's oxen or elephants. To me, it's just inspiring. It's so basic. It's like watching people do woodworking or metalworking. You know, these are the skills that made this country that are so basic, and it's fun. My new puppy's name, by the way, is Moses. I'm hoping that when he goes on point, it's going to be prophetic. but we're discussing all that right now. And then in addition to that, I'm on the Wisconsin Waterfowl Association Policy Board. We get involved in things like sandhill cranes and whether they're going to be hunted and the like. And I'm also on the Wisconsin Conservation Hall of Fame Board. And we recognize real heroes in our society who have stood up for our environment and made Wisconsin the state that it is.
I mean, that I'm sorry, Dale. That is one of the great beauties of living in this state. Just, you know, the wildlife, the protected lands, Horicon Marsh, the state parks, Devil's Lake State Park, Wyalusing State Park, Peninsula State Park up in Door County. You know, pick your placed the people of Wisconsin and the government of Wisconsin. He did a great job conserving it.
Well, I live in a part of the state that Lee Dreyfus once famously said, and I often quote him, a 23rd sound place, and I never take it for granted. And I want it to be there for my children and my grandchildren and for generations beyond that. And it's something I worry about a lot, frankly, particularly as we see climate change taking its toll, and we see the PFAS contaminating so much of our groundwater and the food we eat, et cetera. But I also wanted to mention one other thing that I'm very proud of. You may recognize the name Masoud Akhtar. Mm-hmm. This last week, I was down in McFarland participating as a board member of the group We Are Many United Against Hate, where we were holding a workshop and celebrating kids who have stepped forward in their communities to be future leaders by engaging other students in dialogue so that we can, you know, do something to get rid of this scourge of bullying and hate that, you know, seems to bear so heavily on children. And it was just really inspiring. I've been doing this for a number of years, and Tim Collin and I were there, and it was just great to be a part of it.
Well, that's a great group. We Are Many United Against Hate. Dale Schultz, thanks for being my guest today on the Maggie Dawn Show, and I'll be back.
It's always a pleasure, my friend.
Well, the pleasure's all mine. Thanks so much. Matt Rothschild here, subbing in for Maggie Dawn at the Maggie Dawn Show. Maggie Dawn will be back tomorrow. I've been enjoying pitch hitting for her and being able to talk to Jim Santel in the first hour about the question as to whether Trump could be kicked off the ballots for being an insurrectionist. I enjoyed speaking with Dale Schultz about the effort to ban gerrymandering and then what to do about retirement for anyone who's there or almost there. Now I want to hear from you. I want you to call at 855-75-CIVIC. That's 855-752-4842. You could talk about either of those topics or this topic, what to do about Joe Biden. I want to know what you think should happen. Are you still a Joe Biden person, or do you think the Democrats would be better off without him? I want you to call 855-75-CIVIC, and let me know about that, because my opinion is this. Joe Biden is not a good candidate. The Democrats would be better off if Joe Biden decided tomorrow morning after a bad night's sleep to say in a State of the Union speech on Thursday that I've done enough. And that's what Maureen Dowd was suggesting in the New York Times in her column yesterday as well. He originally said he was going to be a transitional figure. I think he should stick to that and be proud of the job that he's done. He did a better job than I thought he'd do, especially on domestic politics. I have my problems with him on foreign policy. I think he's given too much aid to Ukraine. I also am appalled at his backing of the Netanyahu government with the grotesque slaughter that the Israelis have been committing in Gaza. So I fault him on those grounds. But I think he was very good during COVID. I think he was very good on getting the economy back on its feet. He's been very good for labor and labor unions. And so he's been a little bit more progressive domestically than I thought he'd be. He actually listens to Bernie Sanders, which is a good thing. And so I think he should take pride in what he's accomplished, but he's just not fully, I don't think, up to the job of being a candidate, as Ezra Klein put it in the New York Times. You can say what you want, whether he's up to the job as commander-in-chief and being president for four more years. But as a candidate, he's just a bad candidate. And I think Democrats need to realize that. I mean, I am very angry at the Democratic Party establishment for forcing this choice that 70 to 75% of Americans didn't want, the choice between Trump and the choice between Biden. They were begging for other candidates, and they're not getting them. We're not getting them. And why the Democratic Party establishment is just saying, you know, eat your spinach, eat your broccoli, eat your cauliflower, even if you don't like it, it's just no way to get people ready to vote, excited about voting, contacting their relatives to vote and their neighbors or knocking on doors. That's not going to happen. And I don't know how many polls people need to read before they realize that this is not going well. I mean, one poll after another shows Trump beating Biden. One poll after another shows Trump beating Biden in the swing states, now including Wisconsin. It used to be that Wisconsin was the only one of the swing states that was still in the Biden camp. Now the latest polls show Trump beating Joe Biden, even here in Wisconsin, which would be heartbreaking for those of us who don't want to see another 4 years of Trump, who recognize that Trump is a huge threat to our democracy, who understand that democracies can go downhill in a hurry. I mean, look at Chile had a democracy for 100 years and lost it in one night. And here's another thing to remember. There is a base for fascism. And I believe Trump is kind of a fascist. Pinochet in Chile was a fascist. He killed thousands and thousands of people. His military did. And his enforcers tortured thousands, tens of thousands of more in Chile. And after 16 years of that brutal rule, still 44% of Chileans voted for Pinochet in the plebiscite that finally kicked him out of power. A lot can go wrong with a fascist authoritarian in power, not just saying crazy things, but doing things that end up killing thousands upon thousands of our fellow citizens. That's a risk. It's a very big downside risk that we could go toward out-and-out fascism. It's a risk I'm not willing to take, and I'm urging everyone to do what they can to organize against Trump. I just don't think Biden is the candidate to get us there, and I want to know what you think. So I want you to call 855-75-CIVIC. That's 855-752-4842. If you're in your kitchen or in your office or in your car, if you're parked somewhere, give me a call. Let me know what you think. Jen is on the line. Let's see what Jen has to say.
Hi, I'm Jen. I disagree with you. I think that he's a good candidate. I think we will lose if we change candidates at this point. I don't think we're going to lose with him. I think he's going to pull this off like he did last time. I think that we are in better shape than the polls say. I haven't trusted the polls in about 8 years. I don't trust them now, and I do think that he has done an excellent job, and I think we should stick with him. I disagree with you about Ukraine. I think we should give them more funding. I think that having Russia stomping all over all of its neighbors isn't good for us or the rest of the world. I agree with you about Israel, but I think there's a lot of great candidates to follow behind him, but I don't think now's the time. I'm a huge fan of Gavin Newsom. Would love to see him run in the next election cycle, but I think we're with the right candidate right now, and I think we all back Joe Biden. Suck it up and do the right thing and get rid of Trump once and for all.
Well, thanks, Jen, for your call, and thanks for your well-thought-out comments, even though you don't agree with me on some of the stuff. I appreciate that. You know, I know a lot of people say they don't trust polls, and I remember seeing Rachel Maddow and Chris Hayes doing their town hall together, and they were asked about the polls showing Biden not doing well, and they just kind of whisked it under the rug. And Rachel Maddow said, polls, I don't believe polls anymore, just like you did, Jen. But, you know, I'm a believer in polls. I know polls get it wrong, but when one poll after another after another after another is signaling trouble, you know, I take that very seriously, and I think Democrats should do so. As far as Ukraine, you know, I don't want a Putin to march into Kyiv, don't get me wrong, but I do think the United States should have put pressure and should still put pressure on Ukraine to negotiate a settlement, because there are only two ways that wars end. Wars either end with one side totally capitulating, or with negotiation. Now, the Russians aren't going to capitulate, And I don't think the Ukrainians are going to capitulate either. So let's stop the killing. Let's stop the wasted money and get to the negotiating table. Actually, one of the senior military officials in the United States a year and a half ago told the Ukrainians after they had a successful counteroffensive that that was the time to bargain, get to the bargaining table from a position of strength. And now, unfortunately, they're not in such a position of strength. They still should negotiate. Anyway, that's my view. We've got Jay on the line, who I want to hear what Jay has to say.
Oh, hello. Well, the one point I wanted to say that I think is very important that people seem to bypass is when they say Trump deserves to be on the ballot, I want to say he was on the ballot. He was there. He lost, and then he tried to cheat, and that's why he's getting disqualified. That's a very important point I wanted to make. As far as Biden, it's a tough one. I wish we could have had somebody better than Biden last time, but we didn't. He's there now. I'm not sure how much I believe the polls. And you can't really talk about getting rid of Biden until you're going to, you have in the same sentence say who you want to replace him with. So, I mean, are you saying Kamala Harris? So I'm not sure if I believe the polls. So I guess that's my general point. I don't know.
Okay, Jay. Well, I appreciate it. The U.S. Supreme Court said today that unanimously that Trump has got to be on the ballot. So I accept that. As far as Biden and who would replace him, you know, first of all, I think Biden, after the midterm elections, would have done a world of good if he had turned the keys over to Kamala Harris and just basically resigned and let her drive, let her be the president for 2 years and see how the country took to her and whether she could demonstrate, like I think she would have, that she's very able and capable to run the show. But I think there are a bunch of other Democrats, Newsom, Whitmer, Buttigieg, all these are good possible candidates. So the other thing that that Biden could do anytime between now and the convention is to say, look, I thought it over again, and Jill's been talking to me, and she convinced me that I should not run again. And I think that would be a noble thing to do. And then the Democrats would figure it out at the convention. And the main issue against Biden, his age and his capacity, would be taken off the table. So that's where I'm on that. We've got Mike on the line. I want to hear what Mike has to say on this subject.
Hi. A couple points. One of them is Biden hasn't started campaigning yet, really. And a lot of the polls are based on what Trump has been spouting lately. Another thing is that I think when Trump gets into where we're debating, he's like a con man. And a con man does well in the short term, but not in the long run. I think when you get him on the stage with Biden when they're debating, just based on everything that's happened in the last 4 years, I think he'll get eaten alive.
Really? Mike, I totally disagree with you there. I mean, first of all, I think Biden has been campaigning. I think they've been spending some money. I don't think they're making a dent. If you look at the polls are going south. And I don't know why you have confidence that Biden is going to beat Trump in a debate. I mean, Trump is an alley cat, and Trump will just go for the jugular. And he does seem able to dance on his feet a little more than Biden does, though. You know, Trump has his slips, had more slips this weekend. I know, I get all that. But I'm very fearful of a debate and how Joe Biden would look in a debate. So, you know, that's a one position. You know, I think the idea that we're stuck with Biden, first of all, the idea that we're stuck with Biden should not sit well with anyone. Why should we be stuck with anybody? How about we getting some choice in this country where we're supposed to have a democracy? I mean, it just is kind of repulsive to me that this is what we're left with. And I'm also, I have some residual anger, I have to confess, that the field was cleared for Biden when Bernie Sanders looked like he was going to be the nominee. I mean, let's remember, Buttigieg got out of the race. The senator from Minnesota got out of the race all at the same time. And the field essentially was cleared for Biden to win when At the moment, the voters were moving toward Bernie Sanders. Now, you can argue whether Bernie Sanders would have had a decent shot against Trump or not, but the idea that the election apparatus is being manipulated, that the playing field and who can enter the playing field is being manipulated by the honchos at the Democratic Party, is something that that bothers me no end. And I think that bothers voters, too. So let's go to Mike. Mike, what do you think about this?
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I think this party politics is going to be the end of our democracy unless we kind of get our heads.
Why is that, Mike?
The people already see that it's not working. And when they see more polarization, more unwillingness to work, to do the people's work, I mean, all of us are kind of fed up with it. You know, there's so much work that needs to be done. And again, we have a do-nothing Congress. What they have, 27 bills passed last year nationally, something like that. We the people need to wake up from our hibernation and recognize, and we've all heard this before, we know it, recognize that without millions of people standing up and voting, being involved in the process, being educated. But the reason why, I wanted to call.
Mike, I'm going to have you hold on. We'll get back to you in a second. I agree with you. We need to get people to vote and participate and get things done for everybody. But we'll be right back with you. Rothschild here, subbing in for Maggie Dawn. Maggie will be back tomorrow. Thank you for listening to the Maggie Dawn Show and listening to me, Matt Rothschild. I'm the former editor at the Progressive Magazine, former executive director of Wisconsin Democracy Campaign. I'm right here in the Waukesha studios of Civic Media here on Wisconsin Avenue. We've got Mike and Kenosha still on the line, and I want you to continue with your thoughts, Mike.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate it. And it's regarding polls. Polls are now a daily item that we're all dealing with. They're being provided to us courtesy of a self-serving media. So they're doing it for their own purposes. They seem to be cute in how they architect their polls. I think those of us that have been paying attention to polls can recognize, that they can be manipulated and twisted and turned like a pretzel. Polls are for trolls. They're really an influence item. They're not informative. They really do more confusing, I think, than educating.
Well, Mike, I appreciate that, and I liked your line, polls are for trolls. I think that's funny. But I believe the polls over time, with trends, and if they're from legitimate news agencies. I don't think all the media is self-serving. I do think most of the mainstream media did a terrible disservice when Trump was running last time around. The first time when he won. I remember the head of CBS News, Les Moonves, was saying, this might be terrible for the country, but it's great for CBS ratings, when they were giving Trump free airtime. The mainstream media gave Trump literally more than $1 billion of free airtime the first time he ran. And I remember you'd be watching a cable show, they're waiting for Trump to speak, and that's what they're doing. They're waiting for Trump to speak for half hour or 45 minutes and not giving us any other story, just talking about what Trump's going to say, and then they'd run Trump's whole speech. And they just gave him all this free airtime. So that's my gripe with the media. But I do think we can't just, put our heads in the sand and say these polls are meaningless when one poll after another shows Biden getting beat. That's what I'm talking about, and that's why I want you to call. If you're in your kitchen or in your office or your car's parked, just call 855-75-CIVIC and let me know whether you still think Joe Biden should be the Democratic nominee or whether you think Biden should drop out, which is what I think. We have Tom on the line from Grafton. Tom, what's your thought?
Hi. Well, I think he's got to stay in at this point. I think it's too late to switch horses in this horse race. And I think all in all, he's done about as good a job as he can, or that he could have in the last 3.5 years or so. I too am concerned about the polls too. But if you look at when Hillary lost, they were showing her up like 10, 15 points, and that was obviously way, way off. And I think too that the media is a self-serving, and that they want to keep this battle going on between the two candidates. I blame the Democratic Party for not being more clear in talking about with more bullet point accuracy the accomplishments that Biden has done and the good things that he's done for the country and for people. And people just don't hear it in the media.
I absolutely agree with that point, Tom, on the messaging that the Democratic Party hasn't done a good enough job messaging. I don't think Biden himself has been his best advocate. He doesn't seem to have a direct personal relationship, even mediated through the TV or radio, with the vast percentage of voters in this country, like other presidents have. And when people talk about the polls and say they were way off when Hillary was running, I don't think it's a great argument, because what direction were they way off? They underestimated Trump's appeal, and maybe they're still underestimating Trump's appeal. So those are my concerns. I do think, as I say, Biden's been better than I thought he would be domestically. I fault him and fault him severely on Gaza, especially. There's got to be an immediate ceasefire. I'm glad Kamala Harris came out today and said there needs to be an immediate ceasefire. She's in Madison, by the way, on Wednesday. So there's more attention. I think they're freaking out about Wisconsin. I mean, Jill was right here in Waukesha on Sunday. They know that Wisconsin is going south, and we can't let that happen. We have Don on the line. I'd like to hear from Don. What do you think?
Good afternoon. What Democrat candidate do you think can beat Trump? A lot of the polling shows that no matter what Democrat they put up against Trump, if you want to go by the polls, and what do you have against? Just age is all you have against Joe Biden? Is that all it is?
He doesn't campaign well. He doesn't present well. It's not a question of age. It's a question of appearance and capacity. I think his capacity is probably pretty good, but he doesn't present very well, and that's the job of a candidate. And if you're his main reason for running last time was, I'm the only guy who can beat Trump. And I don't think that argument stands up anymore, because it looks like he's losing to Trump. And so as far as the other, I think the Democrats have a lot of people who would be better candidates. I actually think Kamala Harris is a better candidate. I think Newsom is a better candidate. I watched Newsom in that two-on-one on Fox with Hannity and DeSantis trying to gang up on him. I thought Newsom handled himself really well. I like the governor of Michigan, Whitmer. I think Buttigieg has got a lot of political talent. So, to wind the clock back, I wish Biden had announced after the midterms he wasn't running again, and those four good candidates and anybody else could have thrown their hat in the ring, and we would have had real choices. I'm for choices in a democracy. So thanks for the call, though. I appreciate it. We have Karina on the line.
Hi.
Karina from Milwaukee, what's on your mind?
Well, you see, I'm also in the camp with people saying that I would like to have somebody else. But the question, again, who? Who do we have? Because, honestly, I don't want neither Biden or Trump have next 4 years.
And Karina, you're just like the vast majority of American citizens. And thanks for your call. And the vast majority of Americans don't want either of them. And they're being, force-fed this toxic choice that they don't want to take. And I just think, there are some third-party candidates. There are some outside candidates that are running, but they aren't really, you know, in the running, so to speak. And so we're being told by the Democrats that we're going to be left with this candidate who appears to be going down the tubes. I think they need to really reassess in a hurry what's going on. Those are my thoughts. I'm Matt Rothschild. I've been pitching in for Maggie Dawn. She'll be back tomorrow. I really appreciate the opportunity to be on this great civic media network. And I want to thank Calvin for staffing the controls and helping me out and holding my hand. So have a nice day, everybody.